Thanks, Steve. You know, this kind of the first question I asked myself in thinking about this class is, you know, where do you start? You know, because it is very much an overwhelming topic and one of those things that can really defeat you before you start, because you start thinking about the things that you wish you could do better and wish you would have done. Please realize from that perspective that I'm like any other dad as far as just realizing what we have before us is really a very huge task, and one to be received with a great deal of respect and responsibility. And I know you guys do that. I really have no special qualifications. Just like you guys, I've read a lot of books by people who are, quote, experts. I've attended a lot of seminars or orations of men that were qualified to talk about the challenges of raising children, particularly raising godly children. And so hopefully the class will be one of discussion, and that if we hit a topic that is particularly of importance or significance to you, or one that you feel like has been a real success in your life, either as a child and having a father that was a godly father that helped you, or just things you've learned as a father, then let's share those. And I know we're going to have some guys in here that aren't fathers yet, or maybe not even married yet, but that's still, it's still such an important role, because to be, I think, a godly father really starts long before even marriage, you know, to really think about the type of man that you want to be, the type of man that you want to be following God is very important. And it is sort of uncomfortable talking about this with my son sitting right here, you know. See? If you see him turn really red or, just pound his fist on the desk when I say something, then you know it's probably deadly. Obviously, that was one area that I really failed. I think what it boils down to, and I think if you hear nothing else, is that each of us, and I did this, and I'm sure each of you done it, we each have to make a decision at some point in our life that we are going to try to be, as best we can, a man of God, and including raising our children, and making a decision that I'm going to be a godly father, that I'm going to try to do the best I can to be the kind of father that God wants me to be. And as I said, singles as well as married guys, I mean, you've got to make that decision, and I think it can be made long before you're even married. And I hope we also see, and I think you've heard me... Mark did. I think you've heard me say before how important, and this is a premise for everything that I say, how important, particularly here at Mid-County, how vital I believe Mid-County is to the raising of my children. And again, I am qualified to say that because we have been here ever since Rob was born. And the people of this body, I believe that God has put us in St. Louis. I believe he's put us in this church, knowing that my family was going to need this family to help me raise my children. And I will defy anybody to tell me that that has not made an impact on my family. Not just my children, but Debbie and I and everything. So everything I say is premised on the fact that I believe God's church, his body of people, is vital in the raising of our children and bringing them up as godly children. So, okay, being a godly father, being a godly parent, for that matter, is not a slam dunk task. It's not something that just happens. It's not just the result of a biological act of the insemination of an egg. That does not make you a father. It does not make you a godly father. And it's not something that, left to its own, will just develop and become the type of relationship that God wants. It is a God-ordained responsibility, and I think we have to understand that. It is given to us And we're going to have to give an account to him of how we are a father. And if that doesn't scare you enough, you know, there's plenty of passages within the New Testament and the Old Testament that talk about the responsibility that God has given us when he blesses us with the gift of a child and being a father. I think it's also good to remember as we start out that there are a lot of obstacles to being a godly father. There are a lot of obstacles to being a godly father. And why wouldn't there be, you know? Satan wants to alienate us from the relationships that we have with our children and make those alienations permanent. I mean, that's his goal, flat out. He wants to cause separation between me and my kids. So we know from the start, we've got an enemy that is trying his level best to try to separate that relationship that we have. So we have quite a task. I want to set the stage as to why being a godly father is so important. I just want to read a statement and think about this. And we're going to think about this a couple times through our lesson this morning. From you, your children are going to receive their psychological development, emotional health, self-image and confidence, socialization and morality, understanding, self-expression, self-control, love, and affection. Now, is that pretty scary? I read that and I want to quit right now, you know, and say, I'm not quite up to that, because I don't have a lot of training in those areas. I'm not a psychologist, I'm not a psychiatrist. But the good news is that we don't have to go to a textbook to learn how to do all those things, you know. We're going to teach those things to our children from the way that we act, from just being us, you know, from the way that we act, being with them, and just being us. I mean, they're going to learn those things. And also, you know, given no other intervention, how are we going to raise our kids? Given no intervention, how are we going to raise our kids?
They'll end up like us.
Yeah. We're going to raise just like we were raised, you know. And that may be a good thing, but that may be a pretty bad thing, you know. And that's one thing that we've got to consider, you know. There's the example, I've said again many times before, I don't think I could have had more godly parents than I had. You know, I was very fortunate. I was raised in a very strong home, a very loving home, a very Christian home. But I know many people that were not. I know many people in this church that were not. They were raised in a very dysfunctional, almost unbelievable home and environment. So that there are many times where there has to be a cycle that is broken. And there has to be a decision that I am not going to raise my children the way that I was raised. And that becomes very, very critical and very, very difficult. I know. I mean, I can only imagine. But it goes back to that statement that a father must consciously decide what are the important things that he's going to instill in his family the things that he wants to govern his parenting. And that may be very similar to the way he was raised, but it also may be very different from the way that he was raised. And that's another decision that I think has to be made. You start thinking about the things that that as a father you want to instill in your children. And a lot of words come to mind, you know. And you guys can help me with this list. I mean, and these are just general characteristics that as a father you want to see in your children. If you want, when the job is done, you want to look back and say, these are the things that I feel like are important to try to instill in my children. Anything else come to your mind as we go? Self-discipline? Pardon me? Respect. I got that one here, I think. Okay. Goal-oriented? Is that what I heard? Plenty of things to shoot for there, but I think the important thing that I really want to talk about this morning that I think is a key, these are all right on. These are all exactly right. But I feel like as a parent and a child, when you have children, you're in a pretty tight fishbowl, you know. And it's going to be tough for any guy to be on mark and all these things, you know. Some days I'm going to do pretty good about sensitivity or self-discipline or work ethic, but there's some days that I'm not. Some days I'm going to have a really hard time with respect for others or responsibility or positive outlook, you know. Obviously, we're going to struggle with these. So I think the key to being a godly father is putting all this in a context. And I think all these things, plus any others that we can come up with, have to be in the context of spirituality. And what I mean by that is that if my relationship with God or my emphasis on that for our family is not the context in which all of these things display themselves, then I think we're doomed for failure because I am not going to be perfect in these things, you know, from day to day. And it's only in the context of my spiritual relationship with God can I teach my children that even though I'm not going to be sincere every day and reflect that to you, that is the desire of my heart because that's what God wants me to be. And that I'm weak just like them, and they need to learn that even though these are the goals that I want them to try to achieve, they're not going to be perfect in them either, but in the context of spirituality, that's what we live for. That's what we strive for. And we've got to keep that, I think, before them as we're trying to both exemplify these things and teach these things to our children.
I think that all those traits, I look over those and I'm like, yeah, I wish I had all those. I wish my kids, you know, I wish if I had all those. But when you take God out of the picture, you get the self-sufficient, I don't need God because I can achieve goals, because I'm self-disciplined, because I've got work ethic and responsibility. And one of the things we struggle with as a country, because we've been able to, in our minds, in a lot of people's minds, with or without God, we've been able to become this great nation. And if we think we've done that without God, then we are this self-sufficient, you know, country, these people that are, you know, that are have integrity and honesty, but we've self-disciplined. So that really, we've done it without God, is the problem that we get to when we don't have that, is that we can't do it without God.
That's right. That's right. That's a good point. Yeah, Wayne.
I believe every day to be mindful that we're an example to our children for each one of these areas.
That's right.
They're looking for us.
That's right.
For the leadership.
And guess what? If we don't give them that example. That's right. They're going to get it somewhere else. And the other thing is, again, the importance of this context in which these things are. Take this context out of there. Can you imagine sitting around the table talking about honesty in one breath, but then in the next breath you're talking about how unfair income taxes are and how you shave your income on your tax return to save taxes, or teach about, sit around the table and teach about respect for others in one breath, but then turn around and talk about a neighbor or somebody you saw on TV in a way that is not respectful. And I think only in a context of spirituality, if we have that context overshadowing all of it, I think it's going to be hard for us to not realize our own weaknesses in these areas and take action to correct those as we're trying to teach them to our children. Which is another important part, I think, of being a godly father, is being vulnerable, to share with your children the fact that these are the things I want to be too, you know, but these are the things I want for you, and I'm going to try to be sure we work on those together. But I think this context, we could spend weeks probably just talking about that concept, this context of spirituality in our family. I think it's so vital that it has to encompass all that we do and not just be that cloak we put on Sunday morning. You know, I think there's a lot of families where they live under the false impression that, you know, once a week we're going to talk about these things and impress these things, but then it's not lived out the rest of the week at the supper table or in the backyard or wherever it is. And I think that's the key. There's a saying I read about, you can con a con, you can fool a fool, but you can't kid a kid. And they're going to see and learn more than they will hear and learn. Did you hear what I said? They're going to see and learn more than when they will hear and learn. And so it becomes so important for us to be able to act out in that spiritual context. Our children have to see that our spirituality drives who we are and what we do. And that's the important thing. Now, if you don't have a spiritual context in your family, you've got some sort of context. Can you give me examples of contexts that families have when they don't have a spiritual context? Okay, a religious kind of... Flesh that out a little more. Okay. An appearance.
Words more than...
What achievement?
Achievement. Good. At all costs, you know. What are the bad side effects of that? Ramifications.
Stress.
Lots of failure.
Walking on other people for skills where you need to go.
Yeah, at all costs, yeah.
It's back to what Jeff said, you become self-sufficient, potentially. Not realizing you achieve where that's come from.
Mm-hmm. Very destructive, I think.
I think there's a lot of times... stated that way, but you know, I've got to have the latest Nintendo for kids. I've got to have the latest car for the parents. If I'm not driving a Mercedes, I'm not. I don't have the status that I need. I've got to get as much as I can. Mm-hmm. I've got to have the right portfolio. Mm-hmm. My kids have to wear the designer clothes at school. I think that translates to greed, which makes kids self-centered.
Good point.
Have a franchise, is this like religious commanding? More like it's just the label.
Mm-hmm.
Commanding.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a Christian movement.
I think some families have the whole family centered, it's kind of centered around everybody else has it better. People are always trying to take advantage of me, or that, you know, kind of the Rodney Dangerfield, I get no respect, kind of a, I talk about this a lot, their father's not a Christian, and he always thinks about how maybe somebody else, I mean, almost any way you, any conversation you have with him, I mean, it's sad in a way, because he's always talking about how, you know, the reason something bad happened to him was because somebody else was, you know, self-centered, or somebody else was that way. And, you know, it's a real pessimistic kind of a, the whole, you know, the context of a lot of things he talks about are real pessimistic. And, of course, without God in his life, I could see where that, you know, 72-year-old man would be that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So that's another whole, it seems like a lot, the context of the family is kind of, you know, in his perspective, it's everybody else is out to get me, and it's pessimistic, and, you know, big companies are bad, and, you know, the government's bad, you know, that kind of a context of the whole family life.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit.
I deserve more. I work with a lady at work that her family is so, I mean, it's really scary, sort of. It's a young family. They've got three boys. And their family is so structured around activity, particularly sports, baseball and soccer. I mean, year-round. I mean, just, I mean, they have a batting cage in their basement, you know. And they put a big enclosed concrete pad in their backyard so that, you know, they could practice, and they play hockey and things too. I mean, it's just incredible, the effort, the time, and stuff they put into that. And that is really the context of their life. I mean, it's just activity-based, you know. And there's nothing wrong with sports, because, again, if it's in a good context, there's lots of lessons to be learned in that environment. You know, self-discipline, work ethic, responsibility, integrity, all these things can come out in those things. But if it becomes the context for everything else, then it's I think it's too shallow and very dangerous.
I think that's, we see that a lot, is born out of this desire to best for our kids, which on the surface seems really great, but it ends up being, it means that mom and dad are both working more than full time so that the kids can have the best schools, they can live in the best neighborhood, they can have the best house and all of that, because they think they're doing it for their kids. And it's really just a mass of materialism. When what kids really want is time with their parents.
It's true. There are such dangerous ramifications of that, I believe.
And then as a result, we have to do the extreme of that. We'll get people that people become terrorists, called gangs, etc.
I think it's a good time to talk about the differences in children. You know, the concept of... I think it's a good time to talk about the differences in children. The concept of nurture versus nature is always, each child is very different, but the same. And I think as Steve mentioned, you know, in my case, I have five children. Three of them are reasonably compliant, and two of them are very strong-willed. And I think the importance of the spiritual context becomes very vital here because in our case, those strong-willed children are going to figure things out on their own. I mean, they're not going to listen and wait for you to tell them about these things. Even if you did, they're going to do their own thing and seek those things themselves. So you have to establish the spiritual context so that they can operate as strong-willed children in that environment. Because I tell you, that's a battle, at least in my perspective, and again, I'm no expert, that's a battle that you never win. Against a strong, if you set out to win a battle against a strong-willed child, it's a battle you'll never win. So, to me, what becomes even more vitally important is that you have that spiritual context in which those children thrive, those children learn. And you can't treat them the same way you treat compliant children. You can't have a mold or a process that you can apply to every child. And in our case, we're a great example of the nurture versus nature thing because my two strong-willed ones are the two that we adopted. And but even in my three very compliant children, they are very different. You know, they had very different needs and very different ways to learn. And we can tell you some stories. I'm telling you. Yeah. But
you can tell you some stories.
Yeah, I'm sure you could. So, you know, I think it becomes still so important. And this is really something that I don't think it's rocket science, but it's so hard for families to understand that I don't think you'd get any family to sit here and disagree with this list of things they would like their children to develop. But you would get lots of families that wouldn't even have a clue about the importance of this, you know, as the importance of the context in which they learn those things. So I guess the question then becomes, how do you establish that context? You know, because that becomes the key. As a father, I believe it's our responsibility. We have a great deal of responsibility in establishing that context. I think the passage that rings loud to me that I've seen on the Kelbley's front door, you know, says, as for me and my family, we will serve the Lord. I think it takes a decision by us to say, as for me and my family, we are going to serve the Lord. That's going to be the context, the base, the anchor from which we are going to operate and we are going to thrive. And I think we have to start that young and we've got to stay consistent with that. I mean, because it's not an easy thing to do. It's not an easy thing to keep. You know, to keep that spiritual. There's a lot of things, again, that are fighting that in our society today that's saying, you're not in these words, but certainly in the action, is your context of your family doesn't need to be spirituality. It needs to be materialism. It needs to be education. It needs to be, you know, having the most money. It could be a lot of, we're bombarded with a lot of other options for the context of our family to be. So, I think for us men in this classroom, at this church, we have a lot of aids that help us, I think, to develop this, that we ought to be taking full advantage of. I think, just to name a few, I think Sunday school, I think any time that we have an opportunity to get our children in an environment, even away from mom and dad, but with other children, to learn about God is good. And we ought to be doing everything we can. I'm preaching to the choir here because you're here. But we ought to do everything we can to make sure our children have every opportunity to do that. Sunday school, VBSs, activities, youth programs. I can't tell you what the youth program has meant to my kids. And we can sit back and we can listen to complaints about, well, you know, my kid didn't get to do this or my kid... I'm telling you guys, we just need to, as fathers, be sure that we take advantage of every opportunity that we have to get our kids in an environment that is going to be good and strong, instructional, relational. The friends that our kids make at this church and in this city with the other churches is invaluable. I can't emphasize that enough. And I think Rob would agree with me when I say this. I'm sure he'll disagree.
Yeah. But
his strongest relationships all through school were kids at this church. They were not kids at school. He had friends at school, but the ones that he wanted, and Mel and Clay and Mark have all been the same. The kids that they wanted to spend time with were the kids of this church or other churches that they'd met through activities with Steve and the other youth groups and stuff. And it's not that I didn't want them to have friends at school. They did have friends at school, but I think it's those relationships that will protect them in times where mom and dad aren't the central source of knowledge and truth, you know. I think it's those relationships that mean a lot. So we ought to be taking advantage of every opportunity we've got to make sure that they have those opportunities. Lee?
I agree with you. And I think in the situation that our congregation is in, the kids probably get a pretty different experience. But I've seen also situations where kids were just always involved in church activities. Developed a safe haven for them, but they never were really aware of the rest of the world and how to deal with worldly situations. And so I think, in my opinion, I think that they don't need necessarily to experience worldly things, but they need to experience seeing and understanding worldly things. They need not only be taught about God's goodness, but they need to be taught about Satan's evil and the difference between the two and why it is what it is. And they need to be involved in the world so that they, because we need to help those that are in the world. And I think with a lot of, like I said, in Mid County, with a lot of the activities,
build a fence around them or something. Yeah. I agree 100% Lee. But I can also tell you for sure, if your kids go to a public school, there's nothing they're not going to see. I was shocked.
I don't think there's anything you can do. You could shelter your kids as much as you can, and at the end, they're still going to get filled with all the stuff that's going on. I mean, you just can't.
And if you don't give them a context in which you can hear about that from them, or them feel like they can talk to you about that, then they bottle all that up, or they'll deal with it in other ways. And that's why that context becomes so important. And if I know I mentioned it, but I'm going to mention it again. We are responsible for setting that context, and we've got to do that. Yeah.
Because they're going to be there. They're going to see it. They're in the world. We can't avoid that. And we just have to teach them to be, and that's the sort of role that they have, is to be loving in the world and not
that's a good. That's a good analogy.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think the days of our kids even having the opportunity to be naive and be fluid, it's just over. I mean, just looking at Mark and the kids younger, the things that they know about, the things they're aware of, I mean, I know that I didn't even have that level of awareness sometimes at their age. And so I think, you know, and by the nature of being kids, they're not going to allow themselves to be naive. I mean, they're going to, if you shelter them from it, they're going to find it, and they're going to perhaps react to that. So I think that our kids are not going to be naive anymore. I mean, that's just not going to happen.
I guess seeing how children, as they become teenagers, getting involved and having a strong context of spirituality through their family of believers, it's scary how it's a mirror effect of the parents having it as a context also. The parents are real involved in some of the most important relationships in the church. They will have that. If the parents don't, it'll be very rare that they have that as a context. And power of the father is very strong in the context of this class.
someday when I'm not here, you can have Rob come back and teach the class and tell you all the things I did wrong.
I think that also, to go along with everything that you said, is the only people that will end up being sheltered are the parents themselves. because we decide that we're going to try to block it from our kids, we become blind to what our kids are really being inundated with.
That's right.
And then we're totally ineffective to be able to help them through the situations. Mm-hmm.
Good point.
I just it keeps coming to my mind how critical this is, because it extends to our grandchildren and their children, and just it's generational. You know?
Very much so.
It's deep.
Very much so. I wanted to mention just a thought I had about the different roles as fathers that we have that I think are very important. It's sort of a timeline. Think of each one of these as a timeline. But things start out as we're the total provider and protector. You know, when that baby is born, has no input for his self safety and all that. We are the total provider and protector. It's our responsibility. We've got to take care of that child. Then, as that child grows, we become a model. And what I mean by a model here is there's no input from the child, but that child is watching, listening, and learning. There's no agenda. I mean, we have no agenda other than just raising our children. And that child is just, they see us do it, and that's all that they need. You know, we're just the model. And then as they get a little older, we become a guide, where there is now an agenda. We say, okay, we need to start teaching this child this or that and guiding them. Can you make every effort you can to teach? And this is the initial input that we give our children. You know, we start to guide. Then we become kind of a coach. That as they start learning these principles that we've modeled and that we've sort of guided them towards, then what's the responsibility of a coach? The responsibility of the coach is to help that child to exercise and learn those things those principles that we're starting to teach them. This is also the point we start becoming a cheerleader to really help them grow in that. As they get older, we move into this mentor. This is the point at which they start making decisions for themselves, you know, a lot of decisions for themselves, and we help them interpret the questions of life, you know. We give them valuable input on the decisions that they must make. You know, we're there to help them sort of, again, just with the learning of life and the things about that. Then I think there becomes a point in time in their life where we become an anchor. You know, they start to experience failure. They start to experience difficulties and things. And if we're not the anchor, if we're not where they can go back to and say, you know, I'm really struggling with this, or I don't understand this, or why does this happen, or whatever, you know, we need to be an anchor. And then I think there becomes a point, and I'm sure I've left out many, I don't know, these were just things that I was thinking of. I think there's a point where we become a friend. And this was sort of an unexpected surprise for me. And I think there's a point where we become less and less a parent and more a friend. And I think this is the same time where you actually become smarter in their eyes. You know, that it's amazing how smart mom and dad get at some point. And this is a... and this is a good thing. You know, this is a good thing. We'll always be a parent, but we won't always be parenting. And I think, and I've enjoyed this so much with Rob and Mel and Clayton, more so with Rob and Mel, I think it's somewhere at that point once they kind of get through school and they kind of start their own lives, you know. I've enjoyed it so much because I really feel like I have moved away from parenting. And I've really become a friend, you know, and it's really a neat thing. And like I said, it was a real unexpected surprise to me. I just, you know, naively, I just kind of thought you were always a parent, you know. And then I think another important one, and it's probably not even the final stage, but it's the final one I've got, is you become a receiver of their gifts. And you might... I hadn't thought about that. And of course, they have gifts that you receive the benefit of all through their lives. But I think, again, at this point, with Rob and Mel and Clayton particularly, they have such gifts that God has given them. And you get to experience those in just such a wonderful way. And it is so neat. Rob and Mel and Clay there have been times in the past, recent past in my life, where they have been just an extreme comfort to me, an encouragement to me. And it's such a reward of parenting, you know? And I think it's such a neat thing to be able to think about and know, again, that is so much a part of it. And I guess there is another one after this, because there is a time, I'm sure it's coming, when our roles will reverse. Yeah, and they're going to be taking care of me, you know. And it may not be, pick a nice nursing home, okay? But they'll be taking care of me and Debbie our roles will be reversed. You know, they will be the anchor and the friend. And you know, there'll be a lot of things that they're going to be doing for us in that role, too. So I think that's very important. Well, certainly didn't get through everything I wanted to, but let me just read you this. I was going to close with actually some real information from a real expert. I read in this book from Josh McDowell the six A's of positive parenting, and it's acceptance, appreciation, affection, availability, accountability, and authority. And those are all could be developed in a class of their own. But there was this sort of like a poem. It says, when children live with tolerance and fair treatment, they learn to be patient and fair with others. When children live with encouragement, they learn to be confident and secure. When children live with praise and compliments, they learn appreciation. When children live with fairness, they learn the meaning of justice. When children live with security, they learn to have faith. When children live with approval, they learn to like themselves. When children live with unconditional acceptance, they learn to find love in God and the world. Man has the God-given ordained authority and primary responsibility to lead the family. He will give an account to the Lord for the decisions made in his home. And just want to close with a passage in Malachi, the very last book of the Old Testament, chapter 4. There's an interesting statement which says, verse 4, chapter 4, verse 4, remember the law of my servant Moses, the decrees and laws I gave him at Horeb for all Israel. See, I will send you the prophet Elijah before the great and dreadful day of the Lord, before the dreadful day of the Lord comes. He will turn the hearts of the fathers to their children and the hearts of the children to their fathers. Or else I will come and strike the land with a curse. Very interesting statement. Just by the fact he made a statement means there was a need to turn the hearts of the father to the hearts of the children and the hearts of the children to the father. Because I think that's where God wants the family to be. He wants that spiritual context. And it's repeated over in Luke, the first chapter of Luke, in the encounter with Zechariah. It says, in verse 17, and he will go on before the Lord, talking about John the Baptist, and he says, he will go on before the Lord in the spirit and power of Elijah to turn the hearts of the fathers to their children and the disobedient of the wisdom of the righteous. So again, just this concept of it is important, that relationship between fathers and their children. And let's do whatever we can to protect that. Thank you. This morning, let's see. Malachi 4:4.